It's for the people. Welcome, everyone. That's right. It's your old friend, golf spiritual leader, the Howe Man, Humble Howard, Howard Glassman, and my friend and colleague, the vaulted or vaunted. I think you tried to teach me the difference. Vaulted is something that you vault over something. Are you vaunted?
I think vaulted is when someone jumps over you playing leapfrog or something.
Yeah, okay. Well, you're...
I don't know. It seems kind of self-aggrandizing.
Well, that's okay. This is what I'm trying to do.
For me to judge.
I'm trying to aggrandize for you. It's the vaulted and vaunted. It's the distinguished writer and raconteur, Coach Tim. And this is another episode of our program. We're into the off-season, or the fall season at least. And we're doing shows every couple of weeks. Although last week we did a show, a special book launch show. Which remember that one where the entire show was just seven highly skilled practices of a Christian scientist or something? I don't even remember.
I was so worn out, I had to take a nap. There's just so much energy, you know. I can only take so much reflected energy that comes back
to
me.
No, it's a lot. It's a lot, man. The book, of course, we're referring to is finally available on Amazon. Getting Unstuck, Seven Transformational Practices for Golf Nerds. Coach Tim O'Connor and I were part of the book launch. And by the way, we'll get to that in a second. The show is still brought to you by TaylorMade, Oscar Bravo. I was wearing my Oscar Bravo shirt the other night, and I had it underneath a suit jacket or a sport coat, or they call that, and you know, it looked pretty cool. Although, that's when your son came in. This giant strapping young man in his late 20s, early 30s. I don't know. It made me, I was embarrassing how good the shirt looked on him. It made me want to take mine off and go get a t-shirt. The t-shirt that read, "Too old to wear clothes." Anyway, Oscar Bravo, TaylorMade, as always, we're happy to be with you, coming live to you to tape, live to tape from the Humble and Fred Studios in downtown Toronto, and live from Tim's office in Guelph.
Guelph, Ontario. I think what those shirts are for really is it's for showing off your abs.
Yeah.
My son Sean has abs. You, sir, they're somewhere there, but
yeah, they're
there. Someone once said they have a cookie covering over them.
I had some cookies at your event the other night.
Those men's night cookies.
Good. Yeah, they're very
good. A shout out to Anna Pfister and her staff at Blue Springs.
So nice.
Yeah, made it a great event, and the men's night cookies were once again a hit.
It was a great event, and I was happy to be part of it. Tim and I kind of did a little live swing thoughts. I hosted the evening, only in that I was the first person up speaking, told an anecdote from... I told the story of how, our origin story, how you were writing an article about my favorite subject, me. And then we got into geeking out about the mental side of the game. And then when we finally played golf, and we've told the story here, you just, you know, shanked yourself into oblivion. It was pretty cool. But what impressed me most about that round, where you were shanking literally every iron shot for the entire day, was just how you took it, how your buoyancy never left you. Yeah, I mean, you're getting a little bit aggravated, and I was trying to be encouraging. Oh, nice shot, Timmer. You know,
were you aiming dead right?
I just kept thinking to myself, man, if that were me, how would I have reacted? 10 years ago, I still had a little bit of spice in me. 10 years ago. Within the last 10 years, I have punched the inside of my windshield.
Yeah, yeah. You were not yet, you had not ascended
exactly
to as GSL yet.
I hadn't evolved yet. So that day impressed me on so many levels, and we became fast friends, and here we are. So I told that story, introduced Tim. It was a great night, and lots of your friends and family, 50 or 60 people were there, and I was honored to be part of it.
Yeah, no, it was really, really fun, and I've expressed my gratitude to you a few times before, but officially on the show, just thanks, man, that you really made it a great night. It was fun. You know, one of the things that the feedback I got when I was, you know, signing books and having little chats with people afterwards was that they really enjoyed the fact it wasn't sort of your standard, hi there, I'm an author, and I wrote a book, and I'm going to tell you about it, and I'm actually going to read from it, which is generally, like, really effing boring. And I had some people say that, no, they really enjoyed the fact that it was kind of light, it was like our podcast, and it was just a nice chat, and it was, you know, bright and brief. So, but you made that happen, so thank you.
Well, I thought you were going to talk about me more. I'm kidding. Was that it? There was no, like, oh, Howard was great, we don't have Howard? There was no Howard in that?
you know, were you not listening? You're all over kind that.
Of, but I mean, I mostly heard me. Where's the Howard part? No, I'm teasing. You know, I was telling everyone, and you know, when I was up there yelling at people about how, you know, I was excited that I had written the foreword to the book, and I said, you know, the foreword really is the thing that sets the tone for the book, and I was trying to. I said at the end, I said, if anyone wants me to sign the foreword, I will. And the strangest thing happened. You were signing your books, and a nice woman came up to me and said, oh, Humble, would you sign the foreword? I'm
like, really?
I'm like, oh, sure. Awesome. Anyway, I just thought that was... I was just being, you know, funny. I was trying to be funny. Facetious.
Yes.
But...
I'd love to know who that was. I don't know.
Somebody was there for you, obviously. Yes.
Oh no, you drew. You were a draw.
Oh yeah, I'm a big draw. You know, I talked to there was a few people there I knew besides your family. One of which was, I guess he's a Tim O'Connor super fan, but he's heard the podcast enough. He's a guy that I know from the senior circuit that I'm on. Michael Alderman. He and I had a
Mike. Yeah,
Mike's a great guy. We had a chat before the proceedings, just kind of catching up. We'd been at the same tournament. We've been at a couple tournaments together. Most recently, we were at the Canadian Senior Golf Association tournament at not Blue Springs, TPC Osprey about 3 weeks ago. And commiserated about some of the things that, not commiserated, we just sort of caught up on, because we were on different sides of the draw and different courses, and I saw his name there. And we've played some tournaments this summer where I've seen his name and he's seen mine, but I like playing with Michael. He's just a sweet guy and a very, very good golfer.
Oh, absolutely. He, four-time club champion at Blue Springs. And, yeah, I played a bit of golf with Mike. Yeah. As you say, I mean, he just a syrupy, beautiful swing. And just a really decent and funny guy to play golf with. Yeah, I got a lot of time for Michael. Yeah,
I was a little,
sure.
I'd forgotten. I hadn't spoken to him in person in a while, probably a couple summers. And I had forgotten how deep his voice is. It was a bit intimidating. I was like, all right, quit trying to low voice me, you know.
It's got a golden voice.
Yeah. And there I am, you know, squeaky old radio guy. Anyway,
be kind to yourself.
That's neither here nor there. I mean, I could walk around talking like this. I just don't. I choose not to. anyway, so it was a great night. The book is available at Amazon.ca.
And .com for our American listeners.
Amazon.com for you sad Americans. See how I snuck my little joke in there? I did that, by the way, just for you and Kent Osborne. I did that because I wanted to sort of just sneak it in there. And to show you how I could sneak it into any conversation.
Yeah, no, it's a good one.
Anyway, so what are we doing today? Well, we're going to talk about a couple other things. You know, this time of the year, it's all bonus days. We might get to the Ryder Cup.
You mean President's Cup?
President's Cup, yes. I wrote President's Cup, but I said Ryder Cup. And maybe we'll spend a couple minutes toward the end.
Maybe that was you just telegraphing, I wish the President's Cup was as good as the Ryder Cup.
Well, yeah.
Because it's usually the same thing over and over again.
It's awful. So, and if we have time, like, where are we going? We'll try and kind of carve off a couple minutes to talk about the season of balance. But I was playing last night at Men's Night, and I find this time of the season, it's almost like... I don't know about other people, but I play a lot of events, as you know. I've probably played 15 to 20 events, different single days, 2 days, two-man, qualifiers, tournaments. And I have one tournament of significance left. We're recording this on a Thursday. In a few days, Charlie Fitzsimmons and myself will play the Ontario Better Ball, I think for the fifth or sixth time, maybe the seventh time. Charlie, for you who people don't know, just played in the U.S. mid-amateur, qualified for it, got to the round of 64, won his first match. So he's among the top 32 mid-amateurs in America.
Isn't he also, I mean, that's really impressive, but isn't he also two-time Canadian mid-am champ?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's done that,
the
too.
The guy is a real, my goodness.
We're having a little microphone trouble there. You're getting a little kind of breaking up a bit.
Okay.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, all of a sudden, it just happened.
Well, I'm hoping that we don't have internet issues like we did last week.
No, you're fine. Now it seems back. Yeah, Charlie's a very... I've described him before. He's a very good golfer. But, just like anybody else, Charlie has moments where he's not a very good golfer. When we qualified for this tournament, because we don't get invited just because he's Charlie Fitzsimmons. We have to qualify for it. And at the qualifier, whenever that was, late August, you know, he had a few good holes. He took a bunch of holes off, you know. And, you know, I'm a nap.
You carry the...
Yeah, a couple times group. It was like, you know, hey, Chuck, are we going to... Can you maybe...
Still doing this?
Can you throw a bone for the old fella? So, which I like, actually. I like that it's not just Charlie that... You know, there's been a few times we've qualified where Charlie shot 67 on his own ball, and I just made sure that he was hydrated. So, that's coming up. All by way of saying, at this time of the year for me, and maybe a lot of golfers, you know, sometimes I'm out golfing, and it's just being out there for fun, and not really focused, and not really able to... You know, bring any attention to the game. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm not sure what we should do because your microphone is completely crapping out now. Like,
really?
Yeah.
Is it still effing up right now? As I speak?
Yeah, what's happening is that it's kind of, it's like, you know, when you go through a bad cell zone, that's kind of what it sounds like.
Yeah, okay. Let's see if I undo that and just go to my Mac speakers.
No. Now it's fine.
Okay, good.
Yeah, right now your microphone is fine. I know, so maybe it was your headphones that were screwing up.
That's why I took them out.
Yeah, now you sound perfect.
Okay.
Okay, well then I can continue. So having set it up that way, I went to play men's night last night. It was beautiful here in Southern Ontario. You know, we're having great fall golf. I know you got a chance to go out. We're going to talk about, you went up to Sunningdale, your birth course, the course of your childhood.
Yeah, my mom gave birth to me on the 10th tee. Yes.
That's where little Timothy O'Connor, the golfer, was born at Sunningdale.
It's a boy. Hun, you keep it down? I'm trying to hit an approach shot here.
That's right. You were baptized in a ball washer. Anyway, this is a long way to get to, you know, the kind of golf we're having these days. It's just been beautiful. And I want to talk about last night's round only because I was playing with a couple of good guys and a friend of mine who's an aspiring professional golfer. He's a young guy in his late 20s and came to the game late, but he's a good player. And we were talking on the way to, it's a shotgun start, so talking on the way out to the hole we were going to start on, and he had just played a tournament. I've been working with this kid a little bit with his decade stuff, and I said, you know, we were talking about a recent round of his where he had it kind of going sideways for a bit. And I said, you know, the hardest thing to do in golf is to keep on trying and make good decisions even when things aren't going your way. Would you not agree? I mean, listen, you know, being present and all those things are great, but sometimes it's hard to do for golfers when we're spiraling or we're having a series of bad holes.
It's the hardest, for God's sakes. I mean, No, I mean, we talk on this show about going out and having fun and camaraderie and enjoying being outdoors and all that stuff. But we still want to hit the ball well. We don't want to hit the ball sideways. So we're going to get a little miffed and sometimes really frustrated. But it's in those moments that we, if you want to play well and have a good time and be a good dude, that have to bring some presence. Oh, I'm in it right now. Mm-hmm. Damn it. And it's just, again, it's that awareness of, oh, I'm in it. And when you're aware that you're in it, that way you can step out of it. And that's what's necessary.
Well, you kind of touch on that in the book. And we spoke about that a little bit at Blue Springs at your event the other night about, you know, one of the practices, transformational practices. You talk about meditation, and the benefits of meditation are, as you just described, being able to bring yourself to the present tense.
Yeah, yeah. So meditation, to me, the core is...
Okay, Tim, sometimes your microphone is literally cutting right off completely. So, it's like when you move your head, it's like we lose you completely.
So I got to stay just right on it.
Yeah, right there would be good.
Okay, so I'm not going to move my head. I feel like
Never move your head again.
I'm going to wear one of those things that you broke in your neck. You know, those things, they drill it into your skull.
Yeah, maybe not quite there. Move to the right a little bit. There.
Okay.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Oh. With the word pro, my computer.
Okay, we're going to stop. We'll tell you what. We're going to stop and edit this part and come back when we figure out why Tim's mic isn't working. That you're listening to a special episode of Swing Thoughts. And we resume our podcast already in progress. Tim's mic seems to have calmed down. Go ahead and say hi to everybody.
Hello, Tim O'Connor here, hoping my microphone works.
So I want to tell the story of last night, because as I said, even the great Charlie Fitzsimmons, you know, top 75 mid-ams on planet Earth, has moments where it's just shit. I've seen it several times. And so last night, as I was having this conversation with one of my, he's a friend of mine, but he's a guy I would say I was working with for the last 3 or 4 months. Sure enough, in the first 4 or 5 holes, I do all the things that I talk about as sort of the decade 4 or 5 things that you just cannot do. I 2-chipped. I made a double bogey. I 3-putted. I was on the golf course for 5 holes before I made a par and didn't really make too many bad swings. It wasn't like I was hitting it out of bounds. I just was a little bit off in a few areas that I don't normally do. I don't normally 3-putt twice in 5 holes, but I did. I chipped up to 4.5 feet, missed it. I missed a 1.5-foot putt that I went to kind of just, you know, do the 1-foot tap in, missed it. And I'm on the 5th hole, and so I've gone double bogey, 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 bogey. And it's a beautiful night, but I can tell you right now in my body, because I was out at your thing the night before, I'd done a workout, I'd gone to yoga, and I was pretty tired.
Yeah.
And I could feel myself. What's that?
That's what I was thinking. You'd be tired.
Yeah, and your microphone stopped working again.
I don't know, man.
Okay, there you go. Whatever you just did, now it's back. So I'm pretty tired. I'll just push through this and then we'll figure it out. So I'm standing there on the 5th hole of my night. It's a par 3. And now at this point, I'm two over, 3 over, 4 over, 5. In 4 holes, I'm 5 over par. And I'm on the 5th hole and I'm short of the green. And I chip up. It's not a very good chip. I'm not even that. It was only just off the green, but I chipped up and I left it about 12 feet short because the greens were soft and it didn't release like I thought it was going to. And this is the whatever truth I can tell you. The honest truth is I'm over the putt. Oh, and I had also lipped out a couple of putts. So I've been on the golf course, haven't made a par yet, and I've got a 12-foot putt for par. And in my mind, I said the following: if I lip this putt out, I'm going to my car. I literally, now I, I I don't think I was going to. I wasn't that mad. I was just tired. I'm like, when I sort of said it to myself, almost like a joke, almost like I almost previewed it, like if I did lip it out is what I was going to say to everybody else. And I hammered it into the hole. Like it was good speed. It went in like it's supposed to.
I want to play.
And I made my first par after being on the golf course for five holes. At that point in the round, I was five over par.
Did your hands go up in celebration?
Oh, yeah, I did. I did the both hands.
Exactly.
Now, the point I'm going to get to is this. Back to my original, the hardest thing in golf is to keep trying when it's not going well. And sometimes that can happen at the beginning of the round. We know it can happen toward the end of the round. Sometimes people have a good round going. But a lot of times, wherever it happens for you, and I had this discussion with this kid that I'm working with. I said, the hardest thing is to keep trying. The second hardest thing, tied 1A, is to keep making good decisions regardless of where you are in the round. And we both know this, and it's in your book. When you're elevated, decision-making kind of gets set aside.
Yeah, because you're in it. You're in your emotion.
Stories start to come. You start to spin.
Can't hear you anymore.
And that's when you need to be... catch yourself when you're in it. And that's the skill of awareness, as we've talked about. Interesting how this little topic has come up for the last couple of episodes. And that's what I talk about in the book. It's why meditation is a great practice. Now, it's, yes, there's lovely bonuses to meditation. You get, you know, calmer, your breathing slows down, your brain waves, all that good stuff. But mainly, it's the very practical practice of developing your skill of awareness. So you, in essence, you know what's going on as it is happening,
mm-hmm.
which to me is essential to anything. What is happening right now? What am I feeling? What am I thinking? What is going on? And that way, if you're in it and you're aware of it, you can step out of it, and then you can make better decisions, and sometimes you can just have to cool yourself down.
Well, I say this as sincerely as possible. I was nowhere near, you know, throwing a club or being pissed off, but I was tired, and I know within my, you know, we all know when we're a little bit low on gas. I knew that I wasn't really ready to spend this entire day grinding away. But I also know from experience that, you know, we've said it a bunch of times on the show, eventually, like after my second three putt in four holes, and I hadn't yet made I've been on in regulation for a couple of holes, and I was, you know, hitting the middle of the fairway. I thought to myself, well, I just don't know that I have it in me tonight to keep trying. The second part of this is I was also prepared to shoot whatever number was going to happen, because I've shot a big number before and still been a pleasant fellow. And it was such a beautiful night. Like, it was just the perfect fall evening. It was like 20 degrees and not a lot of wind. So I was, this is the key takeaway of this part for me, I think. And I wanted to share this with others. You really need to be sincerely okay with whatever's going to happen for it to, and there's no guarantee. And I've said it before too. There's no, if you give up, there is only the guarantee that you will continue to be shitty. But if you don't give up, and I didn't, there is always the opportunity that it can turn around. It doesn't necessarily happen, because I've not given up before and also shot a million. But that one putt, this is a third thing, and Charlie taught me this. Sometimes all you need is one thing to go your way to turn your momentum around. And I've used this word before, to give you a lift. We've all felt it, a little bit of buoyancy, because had I missed that putt, and I probably should have, it was 12 feet away. Statistically, I would most normally miss that putt. So if I miss the putt, now I'm like six over or something after five holes. And then it's like, you know, I'm in a cart. Let's get a sandwich. I don't really care. But that one moment in the golf game, and we all have this. This is why I'm going to tell you. When that moment happens, if you're aware, as Tim says, and you're not spiraling, it can turn things around. And it did for me. It's just what I needed something to go in the hole. And then I played the rest of the round. Do you want to hear what I shot for the rest of the round?
Sure, yeah, why not? I'm here for you, pal.
I was even par for the rest of the round from that point on.
No surprise there. No surprise there at all.
So And I didn't have to be. I'm not trying to make the hero of the story. I didn't have to be. I want you to know I would have been okay shooting 87 instead of 77.
Yeah, exactly. So to me, this is an example of resilience, but it's also an example of, it's kind of a big word, redemption. And when it's when we make, let's say, the 10-foot putt to save bogey, some of that can turn you around because, like, okay, I'm redeemed. And it just gives you a sense of hope. And that's why, and this, I don't know, this analogy comes to me, whether it's fitting or not. That's why we love movies in which there's always the all is lost moment.
Mm-hmm.
The hero is just, oh, it's done. All this series of events, it's over for him. And then this glimmer of hope.
That's right.
This eyelid. That's like the sun peeks out just behind the mountain. And then, oh, maybe. And you go forward. And we all just grasp onto that. And to me, that's one of the beautiful things about golf is that it's kind of what we make of it. And sometimes you just ride it and just see what the hell happens.
I love that analogy.
I find it comes to me over and over again in conversations with clients, especially. The word is unfolds. Let's just see what unfolds. So rather than that's very different than craving for a certain result or being lost in the story. Oh, today I suck and, it's a lost round. Today's disappointing. When we're in that space again, when we're in it, that's when we lose the perspective and that's when golf really goes sideways.
Well, I was going to say that's a great analogy and I'm going to use it because you never, part of, good writing or good narrative or good storytelling is the hero's journey. And we love that part in the story where the hero seems defeated, but yet rises once again from adversity. We don't like movies. I mean, think about a movie where we watch some of the golf behavior where the hero is vanquished and it just goes, fuck this shit. And starts, slamming clubs into the ground, then goes to his car and goes home, and then people watching the movie is like, what just happened?
Well, yeah, those are Swedish movies by Ingmar Bergman.
That's right.
Where it's just he's looking out the window and it's raining.
That's right.
And an hour later, it's still fucking raining.
It's like the hero's journey there is like he goes home with he drags his club on the ground and he's pouting all day. I just want you to know. So after that moment in the round, that was the fifth hole I played. I want you to know on the next hole, I three putted that green too. So even though I had that moment of, the ray of sunshine, after six holes, I was six over par. But that little moment on the fifth hole, even though it didn't turn around, my point about telling this way is it didn't turn around immediately and I started making great shots and birdies. It just gave me the idea that all wasn't lost, even though I bogeyed the next hole. It was after the sixth hole I played the rest of the round under par. So my point is, whether it turns around right away or it turns around, or all it did was turn my attitude around enough to give me just a little bit, imagine like filling up a little bit at the gas, gave me just a little bit of like, okay, maybe I could keep on trying, because I'll tell you the truth, I really was too tired to try. I guess if I could say there's nine takeaways here, that was one of them. I was really in a mode where I might be just too tired to keep trying.
Yeah, so I don't know, without beating a dead horse, again, awareness, just, I'm effing tired today. It's not going to be a great day, so I'm just going to get the most out of it I can and get some sleep, and maybe next time to be a little better or whatever. Yeah.
And the thing is, with players like me and other players that are experienced, once it did start to turn around, like I got, I was using this phrase, I got my feet underneath me.
Yep.
Then it was like a different player. Not that I was a terrible player the first four or five holes. I just couldn't get the ball in the hole. Again, I was hitting the ball okay. But after the sixth hole, after my another three putt, I three putted three times in the first. I think I three putted.
Sounds like a regular round for me.
Yeah, but it was very unusual. I three putted four times that day yesterday. One of the times I three putted was for par on a par five. But I look like a different. I look like, oh, there I am. Like, you know, that old saying, eventually your handicap shows up. And it did with me. Anyways, wanted to just share that with everybody. Now, we didn't tell the story on the podcast. We did tell it at the book launch about you going back to your birthland, your golf birthland of Sunningdale, which is a very nice course just outside of London. And I think it's a nice story. Hopefully your Mike will still work through this, but why don't you share that anecdote?
Yeah, well, as longtime listeners to this show may recognize, I kind of grew up at Sunningdale Golf and Country Club, a Stanley Thompson course near London where I grew up. And so I haven't lived there for golly, very long time. But I've always I have so many amazing memories there. And I've always wanted to go back, but particularly because Doug Carrick, he's kind of like an industry friend of mine. It's not like we have, coffee together every week. But he's a great golf architect, one of Canada's top with Tom McBroom. And he renovated the course. And they also, because of some real estate moves they made, they sold off a bunch of, well, no, they developed a bunch of land. And then to make up for that, Doug had to design six new holes. So we've been trying to get this game together for a while, and we finally made it work about a week and a half ago. So I met up with Doug at Sunningdale with a friend, Ted McIntyre, a very fine golf writer and friend for decades. And so I love playing golf with a golf architect who designed the course or renovated it. And so it was just a wonderful trip down memory lane. You know, a big shout out to Jason Wyatt for hosting us. And it was just wonderful to be on that course again. I don't know why the hell it's not the top 100 for sure. Cause it's got, it's amazing diversity of land, you know, elevation change and, you know, forests and valleys and, oh, it's just a wonderful and easy walking course for sure. So yeah, that for me, there's like a memory, every 10 feet around there. But yeah, Doug's done an amazing.
Yeah, I was going to say, that must be strange. Like, that it's even stranger than when I go back to the course in Woodbridge, because this is where you were a kid. That must be crazy.
Yeah, yeah. When I caddied there, I started caddying there, I was about 10 or 11, played as a junior, and, you know, played a lot of games with my dad, you know, as a young adult. And so, yeah, and I played a lot of, some of my most fun games were, my most cherished memories actually were playing with my mother, because the hazard of playing with my golf, with my dad, was that, as a lot of dads are wont to do, he would have instant commentary. You know, miss a short putt. He goes, "Oh, a little flippy wristed there, were you, pal? Dad, let me, can we just hold off on the analysis until I stop seething?" Whereas mom, it was just whatever happens, happens. But you know, I was just super fortunate to be able to grow up at an amazing golf course like that. But yeah, so many memories of, you know, caddying and just moments with dad and mom and my brothers. And so, yeah, it was amazing to go. And Doug's just quickly, Doug has done an amazing job renovating the course, expanding some of the greens, taking out some trees. Looks really amazing.
Now, you were telling us at the book launch the story of your father and the no give a shit swing. Isn't that where we were talking about?
Yeah, yeah. Well, what happened was, so in you know, as a young adult, I became a golf writer. You know, my dad was pretty proud that I would be, you know, going down to the Masters to cover it in U.S. Opens and writing about the game. You know, pretty cool because he's a deep golf nerd. That's why I became one. So what my dad would do, he would invite me to play sometimes on Saturday mornings at Sunday with his buddies. And, well, I was just, I would just become a nervous wreck because I was right in my my stage of being a paralysis by analysis basket case, trying to, you know, swing correctly, reading all the books, trying to perfect everything. And so I'd go to the first tee with, you know, nine different swing thoughts. And of course, it would just be a total disaster. I'd choke my guts out. And, you know, I would just become a miserable wretch to play with. You know, I'm sort of ashamed to say it, but that's what would happen. And I remember a number of times my dad would say in the 10th tee, "Hey, pal, let's just have some fun." And I'm thinking, like, come on, I'm a golf writer, for God's sakes. I know what I'm doing here. I was just kind of a, you know, know-it-all whippersnapper. And then I would just continue to flail away, being my methodical self, being very deliberate, only hitting the ball, you know, into the farmer's field. And then he would just say this. He'd say, "Hey, pal, let's see your don't give a shit swing." And almost every time I would just smoke it dead solid, you know, not perfect, but I would roast it. And the interesting thing, and we talked about this, is that it was sort of like the don't give a shit swing was kind of a crude way of saying, get out of your own way. And it took me only, well, I'd say because I'm a slow learner, about 20 years to understand the wisdom of that. Basically, he was saying, you know, you're okay as you are. You've got talent. You've done your work around you. So just swing, man. Just let it go. But it took me so long because I was so caught in my own behaviors around being a perfectionist, not seeing myself as enough. You know, I'm not good. I have to do more. I have to read more, learn more. And I think that's just what I came to understand is I particularly started to see that in my students. So I started to coach and in men that I facilitated is that we're all pretty prone to being captive of our own thinking and belief systems, particularly that we're not good enough and we need to work harder, when in fact that just causes us to get in our own way.
Well, yeah, I love that story. And we've all, you know, fathers and sons and mothers and sons and daughters, and playing golf with your parents is, you know, I don't know, because I didn't grow up playing tennis or doing something else with my mom and dad, but, you know, golf was a big part of my family. All my brothers played. My mom and dad played. They were in, you know, my mom played on Tuesday with the ladies, and golf was all part of our childhood. But just to that point about golf swings and not being able to let it go. I mean, that is probably one of the major afflictions that poisons more golf shots, not just golf swings, because we've talked about it on many episodes of this program, how the inability to not get to your who gives a shit swing until the round's done.
Exactly.
You know, until we're like, well, this is so bad, I'll just start swinging freely. And then, oh, there we go. There's the face of the club again.
Yes.
And I think a lot of it, from a technical standpoint, is when we swing carefully, I think, and I'm just curious about your opinion on this, when the more carefully we swing, the more focused on the ball we become.
Absolutely. Yeah, the ball, we mistake the ball for the target.
Yes.
And it ain't the target. It's the flag, the fairway, whatever. And so it's a combination of things. It's we become ball bound, and also we become tight. And one of the things that contributes to bad shots is unwanted muscular tension.
Sure.
And you can't release your swing.
And where it comes from, this is what the dichotomy of the game is, when we're on the range, we don't really have a target, yet we swing freely into space. Yep. When we're on the golf course, all of a sudden we do have a target, and now we need to be more careful because we want to make sure we hit the ball. You know, I saw something, I'm not sure if we talked about this recently or I just talked about it with you, but there's this, you know, to use your thing about shadows, there's this shadowy dark spot that people have from the ball forward. The better player you're with, the more ball forward they're focused. the higher handicap player you're with, the more to the ball they're focused.
Right.
Because they think that they need to pour their energy in, and rightly so if you're a beginner, but after a certain time in golf, you're not going to miss the ball if you stop looking at it.
That's right.
Or hyper-focusing on it. My my new, I call her the WID, woman I'm dating, she's a golfer. She plays golf. We were out last Sunday. It's the craziest thing. We go to a golf. This was last Sunday in my life. We woke up, went to a golf course, hit balls for like an hour, then played nine holes, then came back here and watched the President's Cup. And I was like, who are you?
I know. And a lot of our listeners are going, thinking right now, JSL, I fucking hate you.
No, I mean, I was like, what is happening in my life right now? Anyway, and she can hit a golf ball. She hits it nicely. She gets the ball up in the air. But every once in a while, she'll take a practice swing and let her arms go by her head and still keep her head down. I said, you know, honey, not only is that not necessary, you're going to hurt yourself.
Yeah, there you go.
So that shadow between, like, the more you can be, and that's a George Knutson thing as well, swing to a finish. Knutson always said that. If you can't make a full swing and stay in balance at your finish, you're swinging too hard. So back to your father, I love that. Let's see your don't give a shit swing more often.
Yeah, 100%. And it was funny is that this morning when I was walking Freddie, I was thinking, like, don't give a shit swing. That's just a really nice way of saying detachment.
Yeah.
We're detached from what's happening. We're just letting her rip. But I think one of the things that makes it hard for people to let it rip, it's almost like I think back in, Christopher Columbus times, we were worried that we'd get to the end of the world, we'd fall off. Because once you hit the ball, it's like a big mystery thing. And people want to control what happens and most parts of their lives, but we can't control what's going to happen when we hit the ball.
Nope.
That's, again, to use your word, that's one of the dichotomies of golf. We're trying to control our swing where the ball goes, and we can't. We just don't know what's going to happen. The other point is that a lot of us, certainly me, are invested in the result. So please, dear God, let this go in the target or go in the hole, because if it doesn't, I've failed the test. I'm a miserable wretch. I'm incompetent golfer, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah. What does it say about ourselves? And, you know, I even see it in my own game. That is the struggle of golf. Can you let it go? I played that clip this summer. And I've been using it with some of the kids that I'm working with. That phrase, Rotella, just turn it loose. In fact, this kid I'm working with last night, we were playing together, and I went to get his ball. I threw it to him. I said, what's it saying here? He says, T-I-L, turn it loose.
There you go.
So I mentioned the WID, and this is a segue to the season of balance. And, I don't have much to say about it. I mean, it's been great. This is something I came up with in April. On a road trip with our buddy Kent, and my pal Grant from New Brunswick, and his buddy El Rodante, Red Deer Bobby is what we call him. Anyway, I had just had this notion in my head that I wanted to do more than just golf all the time. And I played a lot of golf, and it was great. But I also wanted to include... I usually come April, I never go to yoga again. So I said, okay, well, I want to make sure at least I go to one or two classes a week. So I did that. I wanted to make sure I didn't, ignore my kids for 6 months. And that was great. But I also opened myself up to the idea that I was going to go and do some dating again, just to sort of put myself out there. And I went on a bunch of, I'm not on Tinder anymore. I was on something called Bumble.
And you weren't on Silver Singles or anything?
I actually, I don't know if I ever told you this. A couple years ago, I signed up for this golf dating app. I can't remember what its name of it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Like single golfers app. It's out there. What are you going to do? And it's ironic that I actually met this woman that I'm seeing now, not on a dating app. I knew her from my universe before she was... married to someone I sort of knew on the peripheral of the media, and I hadn't seen her in years, and she'd been divorced for 5 or 6 years, and we kind of met up. But I would not have been open to this had I not been thinking I needed to balance my life. And so even though I thought when I began to, you know, I like to label, you know, put on silly labels to things. When I came up with the idea of the season of balance, I was just trying to get myself out of being constantly working on golf as a, you know, not even almost as my job. And so, like, the big takeaway for me was, because of that, I ended up in a nice relationship with somebody who turns out also likes to golf. Like, it's crazy to me. Plus, you know, she was teacher trained in yoga, so we go to yoga together. You know, she's a very beautiful, you know, person inside and out, and yeah, it's been great. So that's my review. I don't know what you thought I was going to say, but that really is the biggest takeaway for me.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'll glom onto that.
Glom, my friend.
Is you found that you didn't have to try so bloody hard.
Yeah, all the time.
I think that often if you, you know, a number of times I would go out to places like Rattlesnake Point or to Glencairn, whether it's just to play or, you know, work with a client. And there's the Howe man.
That's right.
Working away in a bunker or something and, you know, wiping the sweat off his forehead. And that can certainly help, but I think that kind of comes, and you let me know if I think I'm in the ballpark, kind of from this golf culture belief system that we have to hit balls till our hands bleed, or if we have a bad round, we have to correct it, and, you know, the dig it out of the dirt thing. And I think that often just sends us down these rabbit holes of being stuck perhaps in swing thoughts, but practicing maybe when we're tired, when it's not really going to do us much good. Yep. And I think a lot of golfers, you know, and like to have, you know, our friend Raymond Pryor said, panic practice. And you know what? Like, you're fine. You're absolutely fine. You don't forget how to golf. Everyone in all parts of their lives has their hills and valleys. And so we go into a valley. If we just have a little bit of trust, you know, we'll come out of this. Just rest, recover. We'll be okay. And so maybe that's part of what you experienced.
No, absolutely. You know, I was going to say, because I just laughed to myself, because there was a while there you and Nate were doing some clinics at Rattlesnake, and literally every time you'd show up, I was almost always there. Different
golf, right.
Different course from my home course.
Hey, GSL, stop by and yeah, come share over and some say of your hi. Wisdom. So and why are you here again?
Here's what I did this year is I went, okay, I blocked off a couple of days a week that I knew I was going to do yoga. Because I knew those are generally Mondays I don't play and Sunday mornings I don't play. But I also blocked off a day in a week where I was going to go practice. One day a week. Now, yes, I play a lot of golf, so I'm hitting balls before rounds. And sometimes on Saturdays, if I'm one of the first groups out in our Saturday morning group, I'll hit balls after because I'm not going to the bar and sit around and drink beer for an hour and a half. But generally, I didn't go and practice every single day. I had a golf club in my hand. I take the dog out. We hit some, you know, he and I are out there. I'm hitting some shots. But I took one day a week and said, okay, this is the day I'm going to go dedicate to practicing. And I would go to Rattle on a Friday morning and do my block practice, do some work on my short game. And that was it. Now, again, yes, I did have a club in my hand, as I mentioned, all the time, but I wasn't out there doing that ever. Like, there have been summers where I'd play 3 or 4 days a week, but I would practice 3 or 4 days a week as well, and it was just too much. Because what it does is it precludes, because I'm so tired when it's over, that I really precludes doing anything else in the day.
Well, this might be perceived as heresy in the golf world, but I really think that golfers do themselves far more damage to their game and to the psyche by going to the range. The range in no way replicates what a real golf course is. I think that the best practice you ever do is on the golf course, even when you're keeping score. That's where we're really in the environment of golf. We're adapting to what's going on. We're reacting, what happens to us, how do we bounce back, hitting certain shots. I really think that that's where we learn our best. I mean, you think about, you know, a lot of, like, you know, you as a kid, and others, you know, think of Mo Norman. Mo Norman, yeah, he practiced. I hit a lot of balls, so maybe not the best example, but play 54 holes a day, man. Mm-hmm. They just go round and round and round, and they become really good players.
Yep.
You do your best practice when you're on the golf course, for sure.
You know, I grew up at the Moose Jaw Golf and Curling Club, my birth home, where I was birthed on the golf course at age 11.
Was it the second or third hole?
Yeah, one of those. I was at age 11. There was no baptism, you know, because of the Hebrew thing. But we had no range. I had no range when I grew up. There was no... That golf course didn't get a range until I was way older, after I left home and I came back. And even the little range they got is kind of shitty. So I didn't even... I never understood the idea of hitting a lot of golf balls. I mean, when I learned you could, you know, I took to it, you know, like a crack addict. But that's my big takeaway, is that I did things a little bit more in moderation in terms of golf. You know, when people ask me, oh, you must have played 130 rounds. In fact, I didn't. I mean, yes, I'm going to tell you the number, and it's probably more than most, but it's not as much as most people would think. You know, I haven't cracked 80 rounds of golf yet. I know that's a lot, but, you know, considering the number of tournaments I play and the amount of time, but I'm not playing 5 or 6 days a week. And, you know, in other years, I would have easily gone over 100, 110.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, I think, just to go a little bit deeper on this, you think of how many amazing European tour players there are, many great players that came from Europe. Most of those golf courses, Ireland, Scotland, England, no range.
That's right.
You just go, there's just a little parking lot, you drive in, you put your shoes on, you get your clubs out of the boot, as they call it, and you go to the first tee. And I've had that experience this year. I put my golf membership on hold this year because I was focused on getting this damn book out. And I'd never go to the range now before a round. I just don't choose to make the time, and I just go to the first tee, swing a little bit, and off we go.
Yeah.
And I've played I'm playing still, in the last couple of years, playing the best golf of my life. And it's more of just going out there, not being, you know, too attached to what goes on. But you don't need to do the whole hit balls so your hands bleed things. I really think that just sends people down these rabbit holes of being focused on, you know, body parts and what they do and all of that.
I'm going to tell you one last thing. Can we skip the President's Cup because I got to get going?
Sure, yeah.
I'll just say it.
It's over anyways.
It's over, and I think they need to rip up the format. To your point, this is a great example. I've told this story before, but I'll tell you again, because Charlie and I are about to play in this tournament in a couple of days. So again, as I said, it might be our seventh time that me and Fitz and I have played in a GAO event, pretty big event. And but the first time, this is Charlie Fitzsimmons. The guy's just played in the U.S. Mid-Am. To the point of, like, we're talking about hitting a lot of golf balls before you play or practice. The first time I played with Charlie, I get to the range like an hour and a half before. This is the first, and I'm like, free, you know, doing everything, and then hitting lots of balls. And I keep looking at my watch, like, where's Charlie? And this is our qualifier. And like a half an hour goes by, I'm still there an hour early. Another 15 minutes go by, and all of a sudden, this figure, giant man, comes lumbering onto the range. And I go, finally, we're going to hit some balls. Charlie spends the next 20, I'll exaggerate to make the story, maybe 30 minutes stretching. And I'm like, is he not going to hit any balls? And this is Charlie Fitz. Finally, with about 10 minutes to go, he takes out an iron, hits a couple of those. He has a two iron, like a driving iron, hits one of those and a driver, and now we're done. And this is how, now, I don't know for like the mid-am rounds, but I've played enough golf with him, including the qualifier for this tournament we're playing on Monday. He didn't hit more than 5 balls before we went and played this qualifier in August. Now, I didn't hit a lot of balls either. I'm down to a point now where I do 15 minutes of stretching, 20-ish minutes of hitting golf balls, 25 at the most, and then I'm done. I'm going to go hit some putts. So, to your point, like, there's a guy, the best player I know, doesn't spend an hour and a half pounding balls before a round. Because of the thing you said, he's not forgotten how to hit a golf ball. He's just trying to get his body ready to play golf that day. And that's the biggest difference.
They call it a warm-up.
That's why they call it a warm-up, exactly. Because you're warming yourself up. And I say this, the older I've gotten, the more, like, I'm at the point now where I'm the guy now putting the towel down and doing some, like, I am seriously stretching. Because I'm so much pain, so much fucking pain all the time.
No, I get it. Just quickly, to close.
You're quickly.
When I was a coach of the University of Guelph team, I watched that act over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
Because the Western team, which Charlie played on, is the oldest man in the history of University Golf.
Oh, yeah.
We play in the Guelph Griffins. My players, they'd want to get to the golf course an hour and a half early. And, you know, they're working so hard, there's almost blood coming out of their foreheads. And then Charlie just kind of ambles up and he does his wiggling around thing. And he gets to the tee and he's just so relaxed. And, you know, my players and most of the other University players are, you know, it's not till the fifth hole they finally loosen up. You know, Charlie's just so relaxed from the first and ow.
Yeah.
He just played with just, because he just, you know, he was a mature man, for sure.
Yeah.
He was the only University golf player that had gray hair.
Oh, yeah. He was in his early 30s.
Bits of it.
You know, I will say one thing that, and he wouldn't mind me telling you that he does that I find just disgusting. Because, you know, he's also a big proponent of, you know, we always joke about what snacks did you bring? And I just bring normal snacks, you know, I bring lentils. I've got these barbecued lentils that we like. And then I bring...
Barbecued lentils.
Yeah, they're so good.
I didn't even know they...
Yeah, they do. Yeah, I mean, it's Toronto, man. We do shit like that. So we have barbecued lentils as one of our team snacks. I bring some power bars, like Clif bars. They're small ones. They're like 100 calories and lots of water. Charlie fucking brings, it still drives me crazy. He brings carrots and hummus. No, guacamole. So he's sitting there.
Oh,
we're eating these mini carrots and dipping them into guacamole while we're riding in the cart. And it's just like, can we not come up with something else? Some jerky, something for protein? This is what he likes to eat. Anyway.
Something for men.
Okay, so that's today's show. Hopefully we'll edit it all together. It'll make sense to people. Again, it was great to be part of the launch of Getting Unstuck, 7 Transformational Practices for Golf Nerd, forward by Howard Glassman. And if you want the forward signed by me, if that's what you need, I'm there for you. And, of course, this program brought to you by TaylorMade Golf, Oscar Bravo, and Secret Golf, SecretLinks.golf. Timmy, anything else?
No. Thanks again, man, for coming out. And, yeah, if you do happen to get the book, I'd love to hear what you think of it. Post a review on Amazon. And send me a note, tim@o'connorgolf.ca.
And this program produced by the Humble and Fred Radio Broadcast Consortium and is copyright 2024.